Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts. He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot, Julius. He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns, he shoots. Yes! With 1 second remaining.
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to another episode of Pick and Pod from WFUV Sports. I'm Chaz McAdams here with Joe Henry, Chris Carino. The day after the 4th of July, how'd you guys do celebrating America's birthday?
I did well. I mean, I'm working for a baseball team right now in the Cape League, so I think there's no more American tradition than a baseball game for July 4th. So had some fun doing that, but Massachusetts only state that doesn't legalize fireworks. So we didn't get to enjoy any of those, but Chris, how was yours?
It was good. 4th of July, kind of a big deal with my friend group. So we had a big thing yesterday. We did have a lot of fireworks in contrast to Joe's day. New Jersey, they're not totally illegal, but also kind of relaxed on maybe a little bit. And yeah, I just had a great time. I was in my red, white, and blue D'Angelo Russell All-Star jersey, like a real American, and I had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great talk. I'm down the shore for the first time right now. Or like
where are we? Where are we?
LBI right now. So probably the least patriotic 4th of July I've ever experienced, just because I've spent 20 other 4th of Julys in my life in like a town that like does a whole parade every 4th of July. So, but I enjoyed it down here. Jersey knows how to have a good time.
It's very Monmouth County, New Jersey of you to be in LBI for July 4th, to be honest with you.
I mean, there's not much wrong with that.
No, I'm definitely not saying that.
Yeah. But yeah, we're going to take it off of America's birthday and back to the NBA. A lot of big trades obviously happening right now, seeing a lot of key players from not a bygone era, but probably a lot of guys on the tail ends of their prime getting shuffled around. I want to start with New York news, though, and talk about Isaiah Hartenstein. Obviously, New York only able to pay him 4 years over 72, or $72 million over 4 years, sorry. He took $87 million over 3 years from the Oklahoma City Thunder, and kind of puts a major dent in one of Oklahoma City's only major big glowing red weak spots, which was their rebounding. So I just kind of want to get your guys' opinion on how you thought that trade went, or how you thought that signing.
I think over the last, definitely the last 12 months, but maybe even the last 24 months, when you take it back to when Chet was drafted, it felt like the Thunder have always been in the market for at least an average to an above average center. It felt like names like Claxton and the Time Lord, those are names that were always kind of correlated with Oklahoma City in a lot of ways. And now maybe that has something to do with Thibodeau and the center maker that he is, and now kind of giving value to a guy who can make a difference. Or is he, you know, maybe making a team overpay on a guy that maybe doesn't have that kind of value? You don't know until the season starts. You put yourself in a position as the Thunder and the Knicks where he's going to get paid that amount of money. You don't really give yourself any leeway to negotiate that. And I think especially the second half of the season he had, I wouldn't have taken any less money.
I mean, my issue with this, in principle, it's great for the Thunder because they did exactly what they needed to elsewhere in free agency. They're able to make that trade for Caruso, which I thought was a great deal. They're able to extend a guy like Isaiah Joe and lock up some key rotation pieces as they build towards, maximizing their championship window. And, you know, in theory, adding Hartenstein is perfect. As you said, Chaz, it's filling their only major weakness, which was rebounding. They were the worst rebounding team in the playoffs this year. And my issue is, as you were saying, Chris, there's a question of, with how good the Knicks are and Thibs is at developing centers, as we've seen with guys like Hartenstein and Robinson, are you overpaying, giving him about $30 million a year, especially as you're a team that's entering a championship window, has a lot of guys on rookie contracts that are about to get big extensions? You don't have a ton of cap flexibility in the years coming. So if you're handing out $90 million right now, where are you going to find the money to give to guys who are about to get a big pay raise for you that are staples of your rotation as you head towards this championship window?
I like where Joe is thinking on that, like, a lot, but also I kind of look at it in another way of, like, similarly almost to the Knicks situation and how they're structuring. It feels like they're just going to abuse or take advantage of the luxury tax for the next like 5 years or so. And just, they have the roster now, and with the rules, they can re-sign all those people and keep it together, but they would be going over the cap. I can kind of see Oklahoma City doing a similar thing because they are going to have to pay a lot of people. But if they have everybody on the books, they would be able to go over the tax, but they wouldn't be able to go out and get people and go over the tax. I just to transition this and maybe to put a cap on it, I do think if we kind of looked in the position that Oklahoma City is in now, the trade and the big trade, I think, is coming, or it's at its perfect time to happen. And I think now you take that jump with trading a superstar or just trading for a above average player. Cause I think honestly, you're one, maybe even borderline all-star away from being a contender, and like you might win the championship contender, not just like we throw them in the conversation, like a real chance.
Yeah, I'm not as pessimistic as you two about the whole situation. I think that having all these guys on the books is one thing, and I think, yeah, because hard cap is so high, I don't think we're going to see, even if they can make acquisitions, I still think guys are going to be able to get paid out of this roster, and maybe it won't be in the next few years, and you will eventually have to look at trying to entice some of your guys, like both of the Jay Wills. You know what I mean? Shea, like, who knows, like, when his extension comes up. And I think there's a definite window for this Oklahoma City team. And I think they're just a bunch of young guys that overexcelled is a little false. Like, Shea's not as young as people think. Jay Will is not as young as people think. And it's just kind of the perception because they're all new to the NBA. Like, welcome to the – they're not young in terms of years, but they're young in terms of having a seat at the table, if you guys kind of understand what I'm saying.
Right.
And so that coupled with the fact that they are still decently young, plus they, even though they did have a disappointing playoffs, I would say, like, when they lose in the second round, they were tied for a one seed. You know what I mean? They lost on a tiebreaker. So the fact that OKC is able to add a piece like Hartenstein, push, I think all logic says you push Chet to the four, being able to run two towers. I mean, it's not that Chet was like an even all league rebounder, because I really think that, as much emphasis as I'm putting on this, if OKC can grab boards, I mean, they were terrible, worse than the playoffs. 28th best in the regular season. You don't see that from great teams. You don't see that from championship teams. So if you're able to push Chet in the middle, push Chet to the four, Hartenstein in the middle, have those two guys both crashing for boards, I could see them going up to even the top half of a rebounding team in the league, at least.
And we've seen the modern kind of twin tower thing work. I mean, even recently in the last like week or two, Team France with Gobert and Wembanyama, I feel like that's just like what it's going to look like just kind of having rim protectors
there
and no one really able to like do anything about it. And also, just again, one more thing on the OKC conversation. Obviously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander gets the max contract. He'll get the super gazillion Bumblebee max. But if you look at kind of their timeline, I think Jay Will is deserving of that max. But then if you can't pay Chet the max after that, that's kind of a decision you have to make. Like Chet or Jay Will, who is more valuable to us? Who's our max guy? I think it's Jay Will, because I just think he's shown more, but I do think Chet's potential is probably higher. So you kind of find yourself in between a rock and a hard place a little bit.
I don't think Chet will get, he's had 1 year in the league. I'm not a big rookie hater, but imagine like a sophomore slump for Chet, has another year similar to this year, that's not really a max contract player in my eyes. Yeah. So
I disagree, like, fully. Like, I think any other year,
Chet is a guaranteed max.
Not guaranteed because it's been 1 year, but any other year, Chet wins Rookie of the Year. And I think about a guy like Tatum, where it's the same situation. Any other year, he would have won Rookie of the Year. And then he had a sophomore slump.
No pander,
he still developed.
Donovan Mitchell.
But he still developed into a supermax guy. I think Chet Holmgren is that kind of talent. I was skeptical coming into things, especially coming off an injury. But I think this year he proved that. I'm not handing him a max today, but I think you give him two more years, I think you'd be hard pressed to give me a reason to give J Dub the bag over him, especially in today's day and age where I think you could, you know, meander and figure out a way to give three guys a max, because you look at what the Celtics are doing. They got five guys making $200 million.
And if Chet in 4 years isn't on the max deal, then what is his deal? You know what I mean? Like, it has to be close.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be something like that. And maybe we'll see some new restructuring by then or some weeks. It'll probably be Leon Rose. They'll figure out a way to get people to get like a max guy on a mid-level exception. And then we'll like see a new super team come out. But that's all hypothetical. I want to talk about something that's real, which is Klay Thompson putting on his cowboy boots and going down south to the Dallas Mavericks. Something I've found very interesting: on all major sports books, Mavericks odds to win the NBA championship do not change by adding Klay Thompson. I can see why, but I want to get your guys' opinion on how you feel about this move for Dallas.
No, I'm a tier one Klay Thompson hater, so I fully agree. I'd say their odds go down. I think it's not that he's on the back end of his prime. I think his prime is over. I think he's being overpaid, frankly. And given how well the Mavericks gelled with their post-trade deadline moves, I didn't see them needing to make a big move like this to hand out a bag to a guy that's over the hill in order to put them over the hill as a team to actually be a championship team as opposed to a runner-up. I just don't love the move, frankly.
Yeah, his effectiveness is seen. I feel like with Klay Thompson, it feels like he hasn't played in 3 years, and everyone's like, we have to see how good he is. It's like, no, last 3 years, he's been on the court, and you could see how effective he is, and it's not like a Warrior thing. Like, I just don't think he's very effective. And I think that, to Joe's point, like, it's just a weird move for Dallas to make, because he just went to the finals, and I do understand it's kind of low risk because he is, at the end of the day, kind of just a kickout shooter, especially now. But I do think it's just, and I don't want to get into the weeds with Kyrie too much, but I do think whenever you add at least a person who thinks that they're a superstar to a team with Kyrie, that's something you have to check on Kyrie with first. That's not a thing you can just like do. And I do think that Klay is a big enough kind of name where he could cause issues in that locker room. And the way Luka acted in the finals, it seems like emotionally that group might be on edge already. And I don't know if bringing in Klay is necessarily the best idea.
Yeah, it's a very interesting piece. Like,
and before you go, Chaz, like, even you, when we started the show and you're like, oh yeah, we're gonna talk Klay. It's like, I think in my head specifically, it's like it's kind of like bland or just like not like there's not. And not a lot jumps out at me when I just hear the move in my head. You know what I mean?
I think it's lateral with Tim Hardaway Jr. I think it was more I can't even say, because I think a lot of what people forget about Klay Thompson is in his all-star years, his defense was unreal. He was what he was better than what Mikhail. I know that's like not a huge bar to live up to. He was better than what Mikhail Bridges is now in terms of 3 and D. Like, he is,
I mean, he's a top 75 player ever, so yeah.
Yeah, he was voted that.
He's better than Mikhail Bridges, 76.
What I'm saying is, like, he is the probably one of the greatest 3 and D players of all time. So you look at a guy like that who's also able to score at volume. Like, he was great, but we haven't talked about Klay Thompson in an all-star conversation, and this might just be us getting old, in 7 years. 7 years. We're old. So that, coupled with the fact that he's skipping, his defense has skipped a beat, he's just lost his hip because, again, he's also old. You couple in the fact that new presence on a locker room that is due to be tumultuous with two massive egos like Luka and Kyrie. Adding a guy that doesn't have to just take a back seat. Like, Klay Thompson is probably the only guy that's been added to this Mavs nucleus that doesn't have to defer to Kyrie and Luka because he's Klay Thompson. And that name, I think he should, but he's the only one with anything close to like the stand on. It's a lateral move. I think it was great for the Warriors to get him off the books. If they offered him that contract, I would say the Stephen Curry championship window is over. I literally think they could still win one. They are that good. Steph is that good. Top 10 player of all time. So it is. It's a better move for the Warriors letting him walk, which is crazy to think about how much he did for that franchise, and it's lateral for the Mavs. So nothing negative in particular, but also on the Mavericks side. But also, I don't really see much what you gain. Maybe some how to win a ring wisdom, which I think a lot of players in the league, a lot of players in the league seem to respect that, and seem to. I feel like internally we're obviously media, but I feel like internal league people hold how to win a championship, guys. I think that has real value.
Yeah, you ask Klay. It's like, does the greatest shooter ever play next to you? Oh no, that's probably gonna be harder. Then I don't. That'll probably be definitely harder. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, if you ask Klay, yeah, he's not gonna have he's not gonna have game changing advice. He's gonna be like, if you could find a 73-9 team, your chances will be decent for sure. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's telling you about the bump and grind of it. He's like, yo, I was with KD. Like, maybe if you could find him and do that, it's the easiest way.
Yeah. Yeah. But they had some tough championships. They went up against some really good teams.
Didn't they?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. 2022.
Those Cavs teams aren't good.
No, 22 is like, I don't even count that. That feels separate from the whole like Warrior dynasty, I don't know if they even sweated until 2022, to be honest with you.
Wow, I think that's kind of crazy.
Well, they lost in 2016. Like, obviously in 2016, that was like a different story.
And 2019.
Oh, with Toronto. But then, and that was kind of, thank you for bringing me back, Chaz. I do think when Klay hurts himself in that series, I do think like his defense is never the same. After that, and when he comes back after a year and a half, maybe his offensive game was in a similar place. Obviously, he wasn't the attacker to the rim that he was before, and was more of a perimeter guy after the injury. But his defense straight up is not the same after. And it is straight up taking an entire tier kind of downgrade to what it was pre-injury.
Yeah, I mean, he went from great defender, like good league defender, to just like a guy that you can't isolate on an island. You know, you can't put, like, Klay's on a traffic cone. He's on Luka, but he's definitely not someone that you look to guard another team's best player.
Yeah.
But it's to the point where, at this point, if you look at the other side of the equation, 2 years, $21 million for Buddy Hield. I like that deal per capita over Klay Thompson at 3 years for 50. I think the Warriors, if anything, upgraded.
Yeah, I mean, by getting Klay off the books for sure, and Buddy Hield's probably a better shooter now. Probably he doesn't really play defense though. he's pretty bad at defense, but he's also he's a really great locker room guy. Like, everyone, no one has a bad thing to say about Buddy Hield. I know it doesn't say much, but he was leading those, like, when De'Aaron Fox was like still had anime hair. He was like leading those teams. He was like the locker room leader, which is kind of crazy to think about that sad era of Sacramento basketball, which is most eras of Sacramento basketball. But taking it from the West Coast to the East, Paul George is a 76er. I think that's huge news, a shakeup nonetheless. Probably one of the more under-the-radar blockbuster signings I've ever witnessed. Maybe it has to do with the fact that the Sixers have never been able to make it out of the second round, the fact that Joel Embiid hasn't been able to be healthy throughout the playoffs, the fact that Paul George and that Clippers era have never not had injury struggles. So a lot of people are discounting the fact that someone that there are people like Brandon Miller say he's the best player of all time. There are guys that say he's the best bagger of all time, like most complete game. That guy just got added to a roster with someone that is always in the MVP conversation and one of the best young point guards in the NBA. So I think this is anything but a lateral move for Philly. I think they just cracked the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference in terms of Knicks, Bucks, Sixers, Celtics. Like, they're now firmly and permanently in that. They were always kind of fringe, at least for me, because they would always lose in the second round. They'd always be around that middle, at the highest of three seed. But how do you guys feel about this trade?
I really, really like it. I think a lot of people forget the last time we had Paul George in the Eastern Conference, it was a different Paul George and a almost more hungry Paul George in a lot of ways. It feels like, I don't want to say he got soft when he went to the West Coast, but it did feel like he just became a different kind of player when he went to the West Coast. I'm hoping, especially in Philadelphia in the great Northeast, he maybe can bring that kind of flavor back. I think that was where his defense was a lot more prominent in his game. And I could see that again, especially with the team he's going to play with. And in general, like you said, I think it's the opposite of a lateral move. I think they are just improving their team. I think the reason, and you mentioned it in the beginning, why this is kind of going understated is I think, similarly to you, Chaz, I think there's an inevitability to the injuries with this team. And I think people are just dampening their excitement off the rip because they're just kind of assuming this team will be injured. And I do think that's a backwards and depressing and unfair way to look at it, and not even from a neutral, because I think as a neutral it's probably the fairest way to look at it, but as a fan, especially in Philly, you have to have the faith that this year is going to be exciting, because what is telling you it isn't going to be exciting? Yeah, there has been injuries in the past and things haven't gone necessarily well for you the last couple of years or so, but now probably with your most talented and most ready to go roster ever, you're going to have a chance at it. I would just enjoy it. I wouldn't spend the whole time, when is Paul George going to get hurt? Because I think you just drive yourself crazy.
Now, Chaz, I think you nailed it when you talked about why there's this kind of like fatigue looking at this deal on both sides. Paul George hasn't been that Paul George mania in a decade since he was in Indiana. And the Clippers, since Paul George was acquired, haven't overachieved or even met expectations once. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, the Sixers have not been able to get past the second round in the entire Joel Embiid era. So now when you put those two things together, it makes sense why he's so underhyped, or why this move is so underhyped. And I'm with you, Chris. I think we should be a little more optimistic and look a little bit more at their ceiling than at where the neutral fan might expect, which is a team that's going to be hampered by injuries. Because I'm not the kind of guy that just says, oh, they got this guy, except with Kawhi maybe. But like, I'm not the kind of guy that's going to look at a team and be like, they're going to get injured, so it doesn't matter. But I'm going to look at this team and say, you're going to have to prove it. Because the Sixers roster with this core, even with adding Paul George, the core before it, Embiid, Maxey, et cetera, has never been able to beat a Celtics team that still stands right in front of them as good as ever. Until the Sixers can do that, I just have a lot of trouble saying that they are in that echelon with them. You said Celtics, Knicks, Sixers. I don't know if I can keep the Knicks and Sixers in the same Celtics tier, not to be a homer, but like, until they beat them in a playoff series, I just have trouble, especially with the Sixers, with how many times they've fallen to the Celtics. I have trouble saying like, yeah, they're right in that tier, right in that championship contender in the East with the Celtics.
Joe, you're biased, but you're right. I think the bias is like, you see it more clearly because of the bias, because I think in a lot of ways people will look at it on paper, but as kind of someone who is in the Celtic world a little bit, you know that the Sixers just, they have tried and tried and tried, and every time they do, they fall flat, not in an impressive way, in kind of a demeaning and deflating way most of the time. I agree with you, and I do think in general, it's the Celtics world in the Eastern Conference, even with the Mikal situation. I don't see a team really challenging there. I do think maybe Milwaukee is not getting talked about as much as they should. And that team has Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they kind of scare me a little bit. But then you also look at Philly, and this might be the most unexpected comment of the entire pod, but I love the Jared McCain move. I love picking Jared McCain there. And I don't like him, and I don't like where he went to school. And everything about Jared McCain I don't like except his game. I like his game. I like his just steadiness with his ball handling. And I think it's super vital for a team like Philly that's going to be playing playoff ball. And especially his shooting ability as well. Both of those things tied together, I think, could be so valuable in some of the minutes that Philly's going to need him for. And I think, especially in like 3 months or so, we're going to be like, Jared McCain, that is one of the better backup point guards in the NBA. And I think Philly made a great move.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they don't run him out of town before October tip-off. Well, Philly fans were not, did not seem too inclined with that pick. They're already making fun of his TikToks. They already know and everything. And Jared McCain's an easy kid to clown. But like, I feel like if you're ignorant, like, I don't care about the nails. I don't really care about the TikToks. One thing I will say about Paul George, I think this may be his best coaching fit of his career. I love what Nick Nurse can do with a big athletic wing. I know it seems like it's easy to say you won a championship with one in Kawhi, but the way Nick Nurse coaches with ball screens going downhill, the way he's able to open up the middle of the floor and get his shooters open, I think that Nick Nurse, Philadelphia, Joel Embiid, this is the best center he's ever played with, one of the better point guards he's ever played with. Paul George, it's not his best team, obviously, super team there in LA. But in terms of fit, in terms of where I want his role to be, it remains to be seen. But I think this may be Paul George's best fit.
Wait, you don't think this is Paul George's best team?
No, dude, Harden, nah, Kawhi.
That 2020 Clipper team was actually insane. They were so good. Oh my god!
But they never made it anywhere
because they went to the bubble. Yeah, they had the best record in the NBA going into the bubble. Like, they were insane.
Yeah, and then they lost to a Luka Doncic step back three. That doesn't mean they're bad. Sorry, they couldn't guard like one of the best offensive players any eyeballs have ever seen.
And just to trail back,
how would this be Paul George's best? And also an OKC get a guard.
Okay, going back to just the coaching aspect of Philly has always been interesting to me, especially in the trust the process era, because it felt like, yes, you get the pluses and the positives of playing with Embiid and Ben Simmons and these other players, but who's coaching you? Who are they making you coach? Who are they making you have to listen to for however long? But now, with the coach they have now, it doesn't feel that way at all. Nick Nurse feels like not a detriment, but an addition to the entire kind of Philly picture. And that's something that they haven't had in a long time. Obviously, Doc Rivers assumed most of that time, who, you know, Chaz calls he uses a lot of hyperbole to basically just say he's not a great coach. And I totally agree with that. And in a lot of ways, I felt like Philadelphia not only has a package with the players, but I do think Nick Nurse is going understated in his value when it comes to this team just being special in a couple months.
Yeah, definitely. Real quick before we wrap up, and I do mean quick for you too, because I know these three, we always love the app. Who do you think is the biggest winner of this offseason so far? That includes draft, that includes free agency. Which team do you think is the biggest winner?
Brooklyn Nets.
Defend it.
Okay. Well, the Nets kind of found themselves in like a purgatory heading into this offseason. They had a player who was probably an above average role player to a really, really good role player. And he was kind of assuming their best player. He was the guy on the program. He's the guy, he's the one whose kid is buying the jersey. Like, he is the guy. And the Nets trade him not only away, but they trade him to the biggest enemy and public enemy number one in Nets world. And I think at the surface of that, just that as a fact, it would anger people. And I think the Nets offseason would not be looked back on with such fervor if that was just the case. But then if you do any sort of deep dive on it at all, you kind of see the Nets just where it is in the modern day, the situation they put themselves in. If you look at the draft picks they have, if you look at the capital they've kept in this time and they haven't given away yet, that's a Cameron Johnson who's impressed for 2 months in the summer with Sean Marks and why he hasn't left yet. That's a Dorian Finney-Smith who isn't going to stick around, but will get some stuff for in a trade. Claxton, who he just re-signed on a 25-a-year deal that I think, honestly, his value will go up by the time that deal is over. And then you look at Cam Thomas, really the ball darling of the NBA, and all the true hoopers love that guy. You look at those six or seven players, along with the draft picks they put for themselves, I don't think a team in the NBA has improved their situation when you look at the start of the offseason until now in a better way than the Brooklyn Nets have, in my opinion.
It doesn't take much to improve your situation if you're the Nets.
All-time spin zone.
It's what? Crazy.
That's like I've never – like you – that was like a really good argument. Like, I've never heard a more clearly, like, it's like, I literally, like, assigned you, like, defend the Brooklyn Nets offseason. I think it was good. Calling Cam Thomas one of the most pure hoopers and what is.
I'm sorry. He just, like, has 40 sometimes, like, randomly. I know Tatum doesn't do that, so you're not, like, used to it, but, like, he does
right,
that.
Not right. Randomly, right, but right, consistently. Right. Consistently, because he's actually good and an actual pure hooper.
Yeah.
Joe, we don't have time for this. Joe, go make it quick.
Since you said the Nets, I can say the Celtics. I'm also going to give you two more because I don't want to bore you. Celtics locked up
the championship.
Two of their
what are you talking
guys.
About?
They locked up two of their key guys. Okay. They added the perfect draft pick in Baylor Shireman. He is a top 15 guy in the class, but he fell because he's older. He's going to mesh perfectly in that rotation. Boom. Thunder. Already talked about him. They filled their biggest need by getting Hartenstein. They locked up a couple of their key guys. Third, I want to talk about the Magic a little bit. They kept everyone in their core. This is a team that's been quickly on the rise. And what they do, they added a guy in KCP who has championship playoff pedigree and is a perfect role player for a team that is very young and is on the come up and needed a veteran guy exactly like a KCP who can shoot at 40%, who can defend, who has been there before in the playoffs. I think that's a perfect move for them, and I think they're a very underrated winner of free agency and the draft.
For my winner of free agency, Joe's going to hate this. A lot of people are going to hate this. I think the Los Angeles Lakers had a really good draft. I think Dalton Connect is going to win Rookie of the Year. I think he's really good. And I think drafting Bronny and having LeBron able to be opted out to probably, hopefully, take less money, bring in someone else. I was talking to this. Oh my god, I was talking to a Laker fan yesterday.
Yeah,
and I know that exactly. I know. You know, I try, guys. I try. Yeah, I got to wrap this up quick. I was like, this formula won a championship in 2020. LeBron, AD, and a bunch of role players that at their ceiling, if they play there, will win you a championship. I think that they can't do that. I think Dalton Connect is super sick. He's awesome. Bronny, I love family values, man. It's great. And
Chaz, was that LeBron extension official? Because I saw he got like the max extension. I thought he was taking less money.
Like, I think he did.
Because the reports the whole time were he's going to take the veteran minimum so that they can build around him. And then 2 days ago, I see on Twitter, he signs a two-year, $100 million deal. So, like, what?
No, LeBron did not get $50 million a year.
I do.
It was two-year 80. That's what I thought.
Two-year 80? I don't know.
All right, we got to wrap up quick.
Yeah, and either way, I'm not really sure what that situation is.
Keeping LeBron is good. Keeping LeBron is good. But that is my pick. But that is going to do it for us here on Pick and Pod for Chaz McAdams and I'm Chaz McAdams for Joe Henry and Chris Carino. This has been a production of WFUV Sports. Ooh.